I'm Dan Carell with DCA Card Links, and this is Commerce Code, a bi-weekly digital commerce podcast for leaders in card linking, loyalty and digital marketing, mobile wallets and payments, and financial data. Thanks for joining this running conversation with leaders in the industry. And if this podcast is helpful to you, come join us at a DCA Card Links event. You can learn more at www.digcomall.org. Welcome to Commerce Code. Today, we're joined by Chrissy Maitland, General Manager of Rakuten Card Linked Offer Network. Rakuten is a longstanding leader in the Digital Commerce Alliance and powers the card linked offer programs for leading financial services companies, mobile app providers, and loyalty rewards programs. They provide merchants with a scalable pay-for-performance channel that efficiently drives traffic and sales in-store and online. Today, Chrissy and I are talking about the changed consumer environment in 2025. The importance of value to consumers now, what that looks like in light of a very fast-moving political and economic situation globally, and of course, what merchants, financial services companies, and other digital commerce professionals need to do to adapt and grow during what is already a complicated year. So stay tuned for what does value to consumers look like in 2025, a conversation with Chrissy Maitland, General Manager, Rakuten Card Linked Offers. Commerce Code is brought to you in part by VantageScore. 8 of the top 10 banks and over 3,400 leading banks and fintechs use VantageScore to predict and manage repayment risk. Learn more about the latest advances in credit scoring and how to grow your lending business by leveraging financial inclusion at VantageScore.com. Chrissy, thanks for joining us on Commerce Code. Really pleased to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Dan. Happy to be here.
Somehow we are in Q2 of 2025 already, and you've been in the GM role there at Rakuten Card Linked Offer Network for 7 or 8 months, but you're not at all new to Rakuten. So what's something that you've learned that's new or maybe has surprised you as you've taken on the GM role?
Well, I've been with Rakuten for 12 years, so it has been a while working across a variety of different businesses and roles. But what I've really loved about all my time there, and particularly at Rakuten Card Linked Offers, is that there's always something more to do. Our business is just growing so fast, and we're at a really exciting point, I think, in our growth trajectory right now, where we're expanding into a lot of new partnerships that we hadn't even really contemplated a few years ago. And so it's just really exciting and humbling to be the one leading the team through that and bringing us into that next chapter of our growth.
Well, you picked a quiet and calm and really unexciting time to join the leadership ranks. Has it been kind of a low blood pressure situation for you?
There has been a lot going on, but the motto we always have at Rakuten is that we need to be able to pivot and just ride it out. So we keep our North Star, we keep moving forward in the direction that we set for ourselves, and, we adapt as we need to as things change.
Awesome. Okay. Well, that's good. Well, look, we're here to talk in this episode kind of about the importance of value to customers in 2025. And just, kind of some context for that as to why we think about that topic. So we're kind of in a new era. There's political stress, there's government stress, bunch of stuff people have gotten used to the government doing that it may or may not be doing anymore. And a lot of government contractors, government employees are at a minimum in a state of uncertainty. And that's a pretty big chunk of the economy. And that relates to economic stress from tariffs, job losses, whatever. So we're not going to try and unpack that, but we'll take that as like the scenery to this play, if you will. So we do want to dig into how those factors, how that background impacts loyalty and rewards. So I'm wondering, from where you sit at Rakuten, what changes have you seen in how consumers are shopping or are behaving right now in light of all that stuff?
In many ways, consumer response to what we're seeing today is very similar to how people reacted during the pandemic. We're seeing a shift towards securing essentials, to being very intentional about how people buy, and also to prioritizing experiences. I think with the added economic stress of tariffs and a possible recession, we're also seeing just an overall consumer commitment to decrease spending. Rakuten recently ran a study where over 70% of respondents said they would maintain or decrease their spend this year or postpone major purchases until the economic conditions stabilize or improve. And so that has a real knock-on effect throughout retail and the way people are making their decisions. And they're not only being more cautious about how they spend their money, but they're really shopping differently in order to shop smarter. We find that many more people now are actively hunting for deals, discounts, and cashback opportunities, or they're switching to more budget-friendly brands. We call this in our industry the big trade down, where somebody might have shopped at more of a designer brand in the past, and they decide, you know what, I can get my basic t-shirt somewhere more affordable right now. That's been consistent throughout the pandemic and also now as consumers are really tightening their wallet and trying to think how to get the most bang for their buck. The bottom line is that when people are stressed about the economy and stability, they are laser focused on getting the best value for their money wherever they're spending it.
It's very interesting, and just was reading an analysis of sort of the recent GDP stuff, and so much of the analysis was about businesses and people doing things that are, you know, to your point about COVID and about the similarities, sort of thinking in a way that we don't normally to say like, well, what's going to happen next month or next quarter or whatever, and sort of trying to anticipate. And in this context, it was about tariffs. And so it is sort of really interesting to say it puts the folks who are running loyalty and rewards in, you know, I guess a more creative position of like, well, okay, what do we think that, you know, the typical consumer or our target or segment consumer is going to do in response to their expectation of, right? It's a series of, it's kind of like logical links in the chain. So you could say it makes the job more challenging, arguably perhaps more interesting. And certainly you guys are in a great position, I guess, to see that behavior from a certain posture, you know, at a very large scale, right? Like you've got good visibility.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing, just to piggyback on what you're saying there, is it is definitely more challenging for retailers and for folks in the loyalty and reward space because of that overall hesitancy that consumers have now around how they're spending and being conservative. But there's also a really great opportunity for loyalty and rewards because when customers are laser focused on value, they turn more and more to rewards. They want to get the best deal. They want to make sure that they are taking every opportunity to save. And so it is also a great opportunity for brands to really lean into that space and make sure that they have compelling offers there to really capitalize on that focus of consumers where value is much more of a necessity for them right now than it has been in the past.
It plays out obviously in different parts of the market. One of the things that we focus on a lot at Commerce Code is travel. I was just in London, flew back yesterday to the US, and on the basis of having been in, you know, the airport twice in the last week, it's a limited sample, but it felt like not insane, right? Like there was a moment, and maybe I'd have to look at the TSA travel data, which is kind of the benchmark for how many people are flying, but it felt busy, but not crazy. The plane was not jam-packed, but again, that's on an N of one, you know, each way. And then two, you've got business travel and personal travel, right? So it's a mixed, it's kind of a complicated marketplace, right? And we saw so much action with, you know, airport lounges and that kind of stuff across the last, well, 5 years, really, in terms of changes in that market and how it's evolved, how people behaved. So just, you know, I wonder, again, from the position that you occupy, how do you see consumers responding to the current environment in terms of travel?
Travel has been a really resilient vertical. I mean, after the decline during COVID, we saw it bounce back and continue to grow. And actually, I think travel became even more of a priority after that point in time as people really wanted to prioritize experiences. And I think the same holds true now. When things are a bit more uncertain or money might be tight and you're looking for value, people realize that they're going to appreciate the memories of an experience more than they are the new shirt they could buy or the new lamp for the house. So we really do think that travel is going to continue to ride this wave and continue to be important to people in a way that it hasn't been in the past. And I think all the signals coming out of the airline companies also is that they are continuing to see people prioritizing experiences too. So even though there's been a little bit of a hiccup recently with some cross-border travel changing, right, between Canada and the US, or maybe some people on visas reconsidering their international travel plans, I think there are still a lot of people who, when it comes down to it, choose to spend their money on those experiences and want to prioritize that at the top of their spend list.
I think it's a good example of something that I noticed 20 to 30 years ago and has continued to be true, which is the stuff that's interesting and makes the news isn't necessarily what really drives people's behavior, right? So that, you know, you could hypothesize that there's going to be a whole lot less travel because, and there's all kinds of good reasons to imagine that might be true. But I think that the effect is probably quite incremental and small. The big effect is that we're still in an era of just a huge amount of throughput through the airports, you know, through the travel system. And as I mentioned before on the podcast, I won't probably redo it this episode, but I think in a recent episode with Odin, I had kind of run through some of the TSA data, TSA reports, daily data, pretty quickly, like about a week after it happens or less, as to how many people they put through TSA every day. And it's just a raw benchmark. You know, people will talk about, oh, it was really busy at the airport today. It's like, well, there's an answer to whether that's true. That's an impression. Fundamentally, there's more travel happening now than, you know, ever before. We're back to 2019 levels and it appears to be continuing. And so, as I mentioned before, maybe not crazy, at least it didn't feel that way to me. But then you look at the data and go, it's a lot, you know, the thing is still thriving. So, well, you know, you had mentioned the kind of the big trade down. And I wonder, again, you guys occupy a certain position and you have great visibility, you know, for merchants that are thinking about this moment in time. I wonder kind of how you think about that or how you maybe would think about that if you were kind of in a merchant's shoes. You say, okay, that's the position we occupy. It's different than Rakuten. How do we respond to the big trade down?
Yeah, I think the fundamental thing for retailers to take away is that delivering the best value is required to win customers this year. So the big trade down is one way that consumers respond to needing to make smarter decisions about how they spend their money. But the general premise of that is that they're looking for better value. And value can come in different ways to different people. It could be all about price. It could be a consideration of price for quality. It could include factors like, does this retailer offer free shipping and returns? Or things like, how am I able to leverage sales, promotions, cashback offers, coupons to get myself the best deal possible? So retailers really need to meet shoppers where they already are by participating in these types of platforms where customers are going to do their deal hunting, because that's really paramount in the customer shopping experience today. And I think there can sometimes be a disconnect between how brands think about the power of brand loyalty versus how consumers are telling us they're planning to spend. And sometimes retailers, I think, are hesitant to accept that loyalty is kind of on the decline in some ways from a brand perspective. And it's really more about value. And the retailers who can lean into that and fully accept it and make themselves available to consumers in that way are the ones that are going to win.
Yeah, you know, I just passed through Heathrow and there's all different flavors of merchants. It's just interesting to think about it from the perspective, you know, this vertical integration has taken place in some parts of the merchant market where you have, you know, stores that are dedicated only to one brand because they're fundamentally owned by it. And so it would be an interesting play there, right, where you're not kind of balancing between multiple brands that you offer, but like you're in that brand. I assume the same advice probably applies, which is you just have to think about how to deliver value to customer, which is more challenging in the luxury space maybe than it is in some other places like the Nike store or whatever. But nevertheless, it's probably the same play.
Right, exactly. And I think it is true that luxury players don't have as much to offer in terms of coupons and discounts, because that's not how they operate, but they do have other really high-end experiential things that they can offer in terms of value, right? Gift with purchase and things like that. So it can really take a lot of different flavors as long as the retailer is focused on delivering value and recognizing that that's what customers need right now. Obviously, from our position in the loyalty and reward space, we find the most compelling aspect of value for our consumers specifically is those cashback offers, right? Feeling like they're discovering something unique just for them, that extra value that they can stack on top of sales, on top of credit card rewards. And that really resonates with a large number of the population. So we would just recommend that retailers really lean into that. If they're doing it already, excellent. Try even harder to optimize with your partners or find new opportunities there. And if you're not, then this is a great time to start. And I think it's going to be, you know, really beneficial for retailers, particularly because a lot of these loyalty spaces are paid for performance. So when retailers are also under a lot of cost pressure with unprecedented and unpredictable things happening with the cost of business these days, they need to know that every dollar they're investing is going to pay back something to them. And that's the great thing about pay-for-performance marketing in general across all its different channels and varieties, is that merchants know that a dollar in is at least a dollar out, and they can feel confident about making that investment.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the credit card angle too. There's so many different ways that, you know, issuers and people in the credit card ecosystem can kind of create value for consumers. And so I wonder what you think issuers and others should do in terms of how consumers are behaving differently in 2025? Like, what do you think the plays are there that make sense?
Well, we do know that a lot of consumers are very loyal to their credit cards. They really, really like those benefits and see the value of stacking them up over their entire spend portfolio. So I think issuers and financial institutions are in a really good position to capitalize on that consumer need for value and make it even more enticing for customers to put spend on their particular cards and gain more share of wallet. So if there are things that financial institutions can adjust in their base offering, right, even an extra percent cashback on a certain category of importance at a given point in time can make a big difference in terms of how people choose where to spend their money. And we've seen a lot of financial institutions really leaning into offers as that complementary component of their baseline card benefit program. We work with a lot of financial institutions like Citi, MasterCard, American Express to power those programs. And we've seen a lot of increased appetite from other financial institutions to come into this space or to broaden out the number of offers that they're delivering to their customers, recognizing that that's a really key lever in driving card usage and spend. So I think these players have already recognized the importance of that, which is great. And the more that they can develop that and create a compelling proposition that includes offers alongside a range of other cardholder benefits, you know, they'll be well poised to support customers and to gain the benefits of that also.
That's great. Yeah, it's a, as we mentioned up front, kind of a rocky environment right now. But, you know, there's a lot more flexibility and like tools in the toolkit these days for probably for all the players in the ecosystem to figure out, hey, how do we respond to the changing environment and to whatever it is that the consumers are looking for right now? Okay, so in Commerce Code, I often close, and I got travel on the mind, Chrissy, and so I'm going to ask you about where you're excited about going this summer. I'll tell you, I had not traveled at all. People who've listened a lot know that I record from, because I live in Minnesota, and we have such terrific weather, January, February, part of March, that, you know, I don't go anywhere. But I did end up in Orlando, like last week. I was in London this week, and the weather was unbelievable in both places, actually, but in London especially. So where are you excited about going at some point this year? You got any travel plans?
We do. We also have young children, so sometimes our travel plans are not that exciting. We are looking forward to spending a week on Cape Cod. So we're actually going to be staying local this summer, but it's our favorite way to kick off the summer. Go down to the beach every day, you know, gin and tonics on the deck for sunset. So I'm very much looking forward to that once school gets out. And then we are planning to go to London to visit extended family that we have there later on in the year. And that's always a lot of fun. So can't wait for that.
Terrific. Well, look, it's a pleasure to talk today. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your expertise. We look forward to kind of watching how the rest of the year plays out. And we know that Rakuten's going to be a big part of that story.
Thank you so much for having me, Dan. It's been a pleasure.
Commerce Code is sponsored by Pentadata, the all-in-one financial data API. Whether it is bank account data, credit card transaction data, or credit reports and credit scores, Pentadata has it all in one simple and easy-to-use API. With coverage of over 6,000 banks, over 200 million credit files, and 60 million merchants, you can get all the data you need for your apps at pentadatainc.com. Commerce Code is a bi-weekly podcast bringing you conversations with executives who are leading the way in digital commerce. If you like Commerce Code, your company should join the Digital Commerce Alliance and become part of our mission of advancing trade for good through standard setting, industry networking, conferences, and best practice sharing. Check out our website at www.digcomall.org. On behalf of DCA, have a great week!